This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Welcome back to another edition of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com. I am, of course, Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. Happy Friday. I can't recall a recent Friday I've looked forward to more, because it means that this week's a little closer to being over. It's been one of the strangest professional weeks I think we've had at orangewoods.com in a long time with all the things going on. Normally, ahead of a Texas football game, I'd try to go grab a guest and preview the upcoming game. We did that for the Texas Tech with matchup with Aaron Dickens of Red Raider Sports, and the OU with Eddie Radosovich of Sooner Scoop. Really know many Baylor writers, and frankly, to be brutally honest, if I did, I'm not sure there are many I'd want to bring on to the podcast. But we are kind of going Waco here with Jeff Ketchum, owner, publisher of orangebloods.com, a guy I've known for a long, long time, a guy I think we get along great because our minds can go so many different places in the sports world and in anything world, which is what we're going to try to do today. Try to have some fun, but at the same time, it's been a really weird week. Like, did you ever imagine a week where Bevo would be sued, or somebody would try to sue Bevo, and that wouldn't be like the strangest thing of the week? Like, you'd have the president and the board of regents releasing statements because of something that's going on with the Longhorn band and the school song. Like, and it's only Friday. This week's not over. I it's almost hard to put into words, like, all these different things that are going on right now. I've never seen anything like this before.
I felt like last week was that week for me, probably because I was so much into the storytelling of what was going on with the eyes. Whereas this week, you know, the story's been told. Like, now we're watching the after effect of what, you know, took place after meetings and what is being said of meetings. That it's national, or I guess this week is, what is it, free speech week at UT?
That was quite a headline.
Which is interesting, because I got the detail wrong about the only thing that I got called out for in my reporting last week, like specifically, was we were originally told that that the president, Hartzell, had been in the meeting. By a source that's normally spot on and apologized profusely, but we got that detail wrong and we got called out by that, and we corrected that. Oh, you know what? Turns out he wasn't there. No big deal. Everything else about the meeting and then in the context of it was right. But I lost my train of thought. It's going to be one of those podcasts, Dustin. I just last week, though,
it's hard to have a train of thought with everything that's going on right now. Like, I read Brian Davis's story that he published today, his column in Statesman, kind of like a recap of the week. And as he wrote in there, like, it's the week's not over. And it's like, holy shit, you're right. This week's not over. And like, it's just, you know, the headline about the band and like the band can't talk to the media, but it's free speech week on the UT campus and the Board of Regents is releasing a message backing the president for his message. And, you know, yeah, like you said, I feel like you especially, but like our professional lives last week were really engulfed in the reporting aspect of everything that was going on, reporting the news, what was going on behind the scenes. And now it's like, we're kind of just strapped into a roller coaster, and it's taking us wherever it's going to take us.
Well, I feel like everybody's catching up to where we were last week.
Right.
I mean, you mentioned Brian Davis, but he didn't, I don't remember him writing about this last week. And I was kind of surprised about it because it had been a really big topic for him. And, you know, now you're seeing Yahoo articles. I saw one out today, and I saw that Christine Brennan wrote one for the Washington Post. You know, we're going to start to see these think pieces. Saturday's fascinating because this thing has a chance to die. I told Anwar this, and I don't think he believes me, but I think the game is rigged. I think Monday was all about making it look like the players still have a choice, and I don't really believe they do. I told Anwar, I think less than five. I think the overwhelming majority of the players will participate this week. So on Saturday, the only question that Herman has to respond to is, hey, they all stood, at which point he gets to talk about how much they love the fans. And, you know, and then they've got a road game next week. So you know, they get a little bit of an escape from home. So if it all, if they all stand, frowns or not, but if they all stand on Saturday, they get to, I think, sell a storyline coming out of that game. Then there's no road game. And then it might look, it, to me, would be asking a lot of the attention span of all of us to think that, you know, in three Saturdays from now, if the, you know, Saturday goes by and it's relatively business as usual pre 2020, I think we could get to a place by, we're into November, it's after the election, you know, the narratives of involving all of this could look a lot different in a few weeks. Or if like 30 dudes walk off the field on Saturday, you know, this is our life, I suppose.
To me, in I guess it's probably easy to say this in the moment, given what's at stake. But I mean, I think this has got to be Tom Herman's biggest weekend at Texas. What if Texas loses on Saturday? How many people do you think actually pay especially close attention to what happens after the game? Because I'm kind of torn. On one hand, I think you get the Texas fan base that's looking for anything to be upset about right now. But if they lose on Saturday, the voices for change and everything else, like, to me, that overshadows anything that happens post game. It has to, right?
I think, well, it depends. I mean, really, if there's no real story Saturday after the game and they lose, well, then losing takes the headline won't be Texas is 2-3, but everybody stood. Then that just won't, if they win and people walk, it really just depends on the dynamics of how this thing goes down. I mean, look, the thing, it's a strange one, because a week ago, the people that I were talking with that were immersed in the Eyes of Texas thing really felt like they had time on there. Look, the feeling has been, look, Herman, this is an end of the season deal. We don't do midseason firings anyway. That's not who we are. So especially with the buyout, like they gotta at least, if they're going to eat the buyout and the headline that comes with it, they have to make it look like they've exhausted. They've given Herman all, like, it just doesn't make sense. So, I mean, the Board of Regents yesterday is literally putting out a statement on this, you know, in conjunction with the school president involving the Eyes of Texas. I just believe this Eyes of Texas thing has been so front and center that I don't believe that Texas is so far down the road with what they will do after a Tom Herman thing. But it's October still. Like, I think they're cool. And I think, you know, and quite honestly, there's going to be an Urban Meyer battle that takes place, and this isn't the time to have it. This, they've got to get through this Eyes of Texas thing, and I think time's on their side. I think losing to Baylor probably makes it louder on the outside noise, but I think it may bring clarity for people who actually are in the decision makers who will say, well, he's got till the end of the season, but we know. Whereas if they beat Baylor and they're 3-2, you know, I've just seen it. I saw it with Charlie. I saw it with Mac, right? Like, think about the way the Mac era ended, and you go into that Baylor game, ironically, and it always seems, Baylor always seems to be front and center lately of these moments. And there was this thought, well, look, they brought Greg Robinson back and they're playing better defense and they could win the Big 12. Like, you tell yourself things. And the one thing that we don't know about yet is if this team gets on a little bit of a roll, if Sam goes YOLO and decides it's the last six games of any organized football that he may ever start. Like, people say, well, Sam, he could come back, or Sam wants to go. This might be the last six games of his life that he starts at quarterback. Maybe not, but they might be. And so can he just start playing like a senior? I don't know. Like, what happens beginning on Saturday will start to shape the new narrative. a loss, and I think you can start really mentally putting a ribbon and bow on this thing, Dustin. But if they win, I've seen it. The people start telling themselves things the moment there's just a little bit of that drug they call winning. It wouldn't take more than a 2-game winning streak. 4-2, they're back in the national rankings. Suddenly the FBI index has them back in the favors them to make the Big 12 championship game. And people just start telling themselves things. And I think decision makers are no different.
Yeah, this fan base processing a winning streak. You know, I've got that image in my head of Major League when this is a winning streak. You know, that they've won a couple of games. Like, I don't know how this fan base would process that. That's to me another layer of why Saturday is so interesting. Because I'm like you, I think a lost Saturday, I think, provides all the clarity any of those decision makers need if they don't already have it. Like, I went to the Oklahoma game, and I think I might have been talking to you or somebody asked about, no, it was somebody on the board, like, you know, is this going to reach Red Banquet level? And I was like laughing. I was like, there's no way. Like, you guys don't remember how bad that was, and the scroll at the bottom of the screen, and Mac and Saban and all this stuff. I know, there's just no way. And then Oklahoma happened, and the post game happened, and the reaction happened. And I just, it's weird. Like, Oklahoma, I think, changed the length of Shaka Smart's tenure at Texas. When he won at OU the way they won with Matt Coleman, that to me was like, okay, like he's coming back. And of course, we didn't know the pandemic was going to happen, and obviously that would play a role, but like that was kind of the swing moment for him, I think. With Tom, it just feels like the Oklahoma game, the way it played out, the postgame stuff, I was really surprised to hear kind of behind the scenes, like, you know, how many people were just upset in the possibility of change and everything like that. I think this is it's Saturday's huge for Tom Herman, obviously for many reasons, but if they lose to Baylor, I don't foresee, like, that's tough to climb out of that hole. But if they win, it's going to be interesting to see how the Texas fans process things, what we hear behind the scenes. And I think something that not a lot of people are talking about, which is something that's been mentioned to me a couple of times, and I had never really thought about it because I don't really stay very up to date about these types of things. But, you know, the university is in that, what is it, like a $5 billion capital program right now? Like, the Texas, like, is trying to raise a lot of money. And it's not just money for athletics. I mean, it's money for Texas. And given what's going on with the pandemic and everything else, I don't think Texas ever saw a scenario where, you know, the football program would be so negatively influencing the fundraising aspects of everything that's going on with the university. You know, if it's kind of in some ways made winning even more important at Texas, which I'm not sure. You talked to some people when Greg Finvez was president and things like that. They weren't always sure where football winning ranked on that scale. It was important, but was it as important as a lot of people wanted it to be? I'm not quite sure. With Jay Hartzell, I think it's very important. I think it's an elevated importance. And now you've got a university right now that's trying to raise a lot of money. And this has just complicated the whole conversation around the program in a way that I really didn't anticipate. Is there's a big financial aspect to everything that's going on as well.
It's, and look, the band thing is a wrinkle into this.
Who would have thought that would be the headache that it is? Because make no mistake, that's a situation that a lot of people are trying to deal with on campus right now.
I think it's a bigger force. I think the football players will get the headlines.
Right.
I think the real problem's in the band.
And it is, yeah. No, seriously, don't laugh when we say that. It's true.
Like, everybody's been mad at the football. It's funny because last week, a little bit, I'll you know, pull the curtain behind Oz a little bit. Towards the end of last week, I was talking to one of my highest level sources. He wasn't real happy with me with the article that I wrote on Tuesday, although he was sourced in it. I think he thought I went too hard in on Del Conte, and he thought that I didn't go hard enough on Herman. And I was like, well, you know, Herman owns some stuff in this. And he and I disagreed a little bit, ironically enough, about.
At least Herman shows up and talks.
Well, so, but what he was telling me behind the scenes was like this band thing. And like he and I like talked about this thing quite a bit last week, but he was telling me the band's a problem and that, you know, because what I had been talking to him about throughout the week was the protocols of they got cheerleader problems and palm squad problems and football. You know what I mean? They got all these little groups that in their own way are handling these things. And I learned last week that cheerleading falls under the category of UT Athletics, that is a Chris Del Conte, that group, that organization falls under his control. And I was like, all right, well, I bet the cheerleaders are sorted out as far as things being sorted out on campus about what's going to happen. I bet they get the mandate or whatever it is that we want to call this thing where they're encouraged to do so. But the band, like, it was just made crystal clear to me that A, nobody in athletics has any pull whatsoever with the band, and that the president's office really doesn't have any control or say so in the band. And that even at the level of like the Board of Regents, like that is a tough nut for them to crack. And it's funny because there's been all this conversation about African-American studies and the Dr. Leonard Moores of the world. And it's been like, I have never sensed behind the scenes from talking to my highest level sources that the people that people have been wanting to get angry about are people that behind the scenes people are angry about, i.e. really nobody behind the scenes at the university level is upset at, you know, the people who are teaching African-American studies or black class, any of that stuff. But the band, that's the thing, Dustin, like behind the scenes, I was told last week they thought they'd made some progress with the band. And I asked what that meant, and I didn't get an answer. It was like a drive-by comment. Good news, hearing that, like, we may have made some headway with the band. And I was like, what does that mean? And then I didn't get a response back. And this week went by, and I've kind of just I've stayed off the grid a little bit this week and left some of my sources alone. But the last couple of days, I've been like, oh, I guess they didn't make enough progress with the band, because we are now at a point where it feels like the band could probably be there tomorrow if they wanted the band to be there. And instead they're like, nah, not even dealing with that. No band. And I don't know how to process the fact that, you know, that there will be a football game on Saturday and the football players will do what the football players will do. And it feels like I sense what I think they're going to do. I have no idea what would happen if the band showed up. And it would just be an amazing thing from an optic standpoint if after a football game was over, the visuals of the band bailing and or sitting or whatever, like Texas has just decided that ain't going to happen. And now the show band of the Southwest is just a thing that takes place without an audit. It's a fascinating little development. I'm sorry we've gone on an Eyes of Texas rant thing, but this band
it's not really a rant though, like, because it's, you know, like I never would have imagined 3 or 4 weeks ago, like, we'd be talking about the band like this, you know. And it's, I had a buddy that texted me yesterday, and I hadn't thought of this, and he goes, do you remember last year, you know, all the people, you know, tweeting at Chris Del Conte, you know, and that's one of CDC's things, is he replies to the tweets of the fans, which you're not really seeing much right now. But once upon a time, it was like after every game or before every game or during games, it's just, you know, fans are tweeting just ridiculous things. And some of them are like, and I'd say maybe 10% of them are legit questions and 90% are just pure idiocracy. But he goes, do you remember, some of the students tweeting at Del Conte? And I'm thinking in my head, well, yeah, students at the games, whatever. He goes, no, the band. And I'm like, oh yeah, there were so many of them that were just tweeting about their like where they were sitting at the game and what was going on and the procedures and like all of these just tweets coming from the band. And I was like, I totally forgot about that. So here we are last year. It's, you know, the seating's the issue and give the band some more respect and, you know, make sure you were here or whatever. And fast forward to a year, it's like, no, you know what? We're not gonna participate. We're not gonna play the Eyes of Texas. And you've basically got the, I think, the president of Board of Regents saying, whatever, stay at home. We'll deal with you later. We don't have time to deal with this right now. And it's what a wild world this program has been on right now. And I was in some ways, I was curious if you agree. This makes me appreciate Mack Brown and DeLoss Dodds a lot more. I already thought that they were very good at their jobs at the University of Texas, you know, especially when they were at their peaks and the program was rolling and everything else. But like, man, you start to pull the curtain back and you just all these little things. And it's like, how did DeLoss and those guys get this thing going the way they had it going when it seems like it's there's just so many potential pitfalls and problems for this athletic department right now?
I don't know.
I'm trying to give fans an opportunity to think back to the glory years a little bit.
I don't know. I'm also trying to imagine how Texas fans would be. Look, I've seen Mac on television multiple times wearing Black Lives Matter t-shirts. And like, I'm trying to imagine if Tom Herman had done that in the last couple of weeks. Cause I've seen Mac do it. And it's a strange time. Like the thing you're right about with Mac, and I talk about this every week with Anwar when we watch the Monday press conferences, it's hard to watch Herman and to watch how he, for instance, responds after a loss and not think back to how, and full transparency, I was in awe of the way Mac could filibuster and handle a press conference after a loss.
I'm cutting you off right there real quick. He had the classic Mac filibuster this week after Florida State. He basically, I was looking online, there was like a North Carolina State beat reporter saying that he was naming the entire North Carolina State roster. And I was like, yes, that's Mac after a loss. He still got it.
But he did. But look, it's and Chad Hastings and I would sit back and like marvel at his ability to take a 25-minute press conference and whittle it down to like 8 minutes and three questions. And, you know, if it's the week of Halloween, you could always count on a good trick or treat. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he would just know how to do it. And I would, and he was never speak to us, the angry. He would speak to moms. That's who he would speak to every time. He was talking to someone's mom who might see this. And the rest of us didn't really matter that we didn't get answers. So it's interesting to when Tom comes out and does his deal, it's hard not to think about Mac, who just, he just had a way of owning the messaging thing that is it turns out is really difficult to do. Maybe the same with DeLoss. It felt like the personal details were the things that those guys got right. And a lot of times it was big picture planning and thinking that they didn't. It feels like as Texas has maybe modernized itself as a university, as an athletic department. And look, Tom Herman's about as modern of a head coach in football as you could possibly have. It does feel like now we hearken back to the days when the fine details, the small touch is sometimes lacking. And sometimes in moments of great crisis, those small little details matter quite a bit. We'll see how Texas handles those moving forward. The band thing is fascinating to me because, Dustin, real quick, this is the last thing I'll say on this because then we'll talk. I really do want to talk about like other things. I have idea.
Yeah, we'll switch. I got some things here. I'm not sure how many you like, but I've got some.
I don't care. Like, I'll do anything. I did an interview with Bree Bagwell yesterday, and we didn't say anything about sports hardly at all, and it was so nice. I forgot that, when I used to – that's the thing I miss, I think, about radio more than anything else is the breakup of the – constant kind of same topics. However, last week, you will know what I'm talking about, where you and I were on an email exchange on Orange Bloods PMs, and the conversation of like the players in the Oklahoma game was being discussed with an Orange Bloods poster, and he was making the point of you know, in reality, it wasn't the entire team, that it was kind of confusing and stuff like that. And the question that I asked in return was, well, what's the number? What's the number that makes it, it's no longer a small number, but like a number that has to be respected? Because, you know, I think we would see that with back in the day with the Washington Football Club, where it would be like only 10% of Native Americans who were polled. And I would be like, okay, well, what's the number ever got to be before we go, that's too many, we're past the point of return? And I asked that, and he was like, I don't know. And that, so it kind of killed the conversation. I asked, does it need to be half? And that felt like a lot. Like, again, I don't know what the magic number looks like. If half the football team walks off the field, that would feel like a lot. If it's 10 out of 125, I don't know. I don't know what the magic number is. The thing with the band that we know, because this has gotten out through reporting, is that internally, it's like 50-50 at best. They're concerned that more than they're so concerned about the numbers that they don't think they can play the Eyes of Texas because they don't have all the instruments that they would need to play the song.
You're going to get an all tuba version of the Eyes of Texas.
Yes. So it feels like I bring that story up that we were talking about with the football team, because I think the football team may fall into the backdrop a little bit as it maybe as it relates to this after this weekend. But I don't know how you talk, let's say, 50% of the band from feeling the way that 50%, I don't know. That is a to-be-determined deal. And it's weird that this story may be talked about for months and months and months, maybe long after the football stuff is done with it. This thing will now move on to a university level, and maybe that's what it needs to be. Get the blame of this discussion being put off the shoulders of just the athletes and let it represent the university issue that it clearly is at this point. It's not just a bunch of football players and the basketball players who got upset about something.
In like my wrestling mind, I've got this image in my head of like a storyline of the alumni band showing up and like fighting the current band, and like just people are throwing instruments in the stands, and I'm in 2020. I'm not ruling anything out, and it's I didn't think
that this wouldn't rule out that the older band, although I'm sure they can find enough people to fill it out. I bet that some of those people fall in line with these kids though too. Like,
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, like I bet there's again, this has now become a truly university issue. And I think it's important for people on both sides of the spectrum to speak out about what this thing means and to try to have some real dialogue as opposed to suppression of it, because I don't think it is as simple as the alumni band will come in and do it. I bet that alumni band is more loyal towards the current band than it is the school song. If I had to bet $100, I'd bet there'd be people in the alumni band saying, don't break the, you know what I mean? Like, people stick together. People stick together. And I just can't believe that an alumni band would throw the current, how do you build that bridge ever again? I don't know. I don't know. Like, I would tell people, be careful. Don't go looking for the alumni band's opinion on this, because it may be that they'll defend the current band to the death. Like, I don't know. I don't know how the band and its roots towards solidarity. Have you ever thought about it, Dustin?
No, I honestly never have.
Not I got to call now. Some people that were in my high school band and ask them, like, hey, FYI, you guys stick together or what? Do you think? I don't know. Like, I'm curious. I have no idea. I think there's this. Don't you agree that most people on Orange Blood seem to think, scrap the current band, get the alumni band?
Oh, absolutely. And, yeah, absolutely. That's one of the first reactions.
And I can't. Look, the demographics of a lot of the older people probably run in tune with people who like are down with keeping the song. Man, I just have never known any organization that breaks, like, you know, people, actors stay with actors, football players stay with football players, police stay with police. Like, it is a very American thing. Union, you don't break the union. And I wonder if there's a weird union thing with the band that would make the alumni band go, nope, hell no, we're with the younger guys, even if it would blow their brains to, like, have to say such a thing. Okay, I'm done. I'm good.
We're going to go all over the place here. So, you know, I'm watching Parks and Rec, and we just started season 7. I immediately thought of the last season of The Wire because the first episode of season 7 was so different. And I kind of had this dread as I was watching, like, oh no, like, they're not going to ruin the show, but they're going to kind of do the weird, try too hard ending season that kind of jumps the shark a little bit. Please, I've only watched the first episode of season 7. I'm awful at watching television. I'm just terrible at it. I get sucked into watching The Masked Singer with my wife and some of her shows and everything else. But tell me that it's going to be okay. This is not going to be just a bizarre ending season to what has become one of my favorite comedies of all time.
It's going to be fine.
Okay.
Now, look, it's jarring that they jump into the future. So you see the first episode of season 7.
Yeah, the whole elevator thing and, like, you know, it's different. It's different. I wasn't ready for that.
But what I'm telling you is that they stick the ending. I don't remember. And my wife and I have watched this show. She's always rewatching it. Always. So if I am hanging out with her at all, this and The Office and a few other shows are in the rotation. And yeah, like it starts out a little different. I think you settle in. I think they stick the landing. I always think of the show at the very end as sticking the landing.
Okay, good. Good. Yeah. Like The Wire, and I'm sorry if I'm spoiling it, but, you know, even I was like 10 years late to that. So it's been a long time, but, like, you know, the way it ended with the bar scene and you know, the send off and the police kind of funeral type thing. I was like, okay, this kind of wrapped up in a way that I'll remember positively. And I watched that first episode and I was like, uh-oh, like, Ron's doing what he's doing. This is, I just kind of get that Wire flashback. Like, please don't come close to ruining what is going to be remembered for me as a great, great show. I had a weird thought as I've really gone deep into Jose Mourinho. I finished the Tottenham documentary on Amazon Prime. I just have been reading about him, watching YouTube videos. I'm just fascinated about him. And I had a thought like yesterday. He reminds me of Augie Garrido. Do you see that? Like, he's kind of got this, you know, people have, you know, watched the YouTube videos of Augie and, you know, the blow ups, and he gets fired up and he cusses and he's, you know, everybody thinks they have this kind of outside perception of Augie, but, like, he's actually, like, you know, really loved food and loves people and is very caring and that sort of thing. Like, I feel like, you know, Jose Mourinho, his outside perception is different than kind of what he is. Like, those are two guys that just were obsessed with competitiveness and winning and the mental side of it. And yeah, they could be tough on their guys and they could cuss a lot and they could be demanding and things like that. But I don't know. I just had this thought, like, you know what? He kind of, if Jose Mourinho was a college baseball manager, I think he'd be a lot like Augie Garrido.
It's funny. When you first said it, I was like, yeah. And then I was like, I don't know. And then by the end of it, I was like, yeah, no. It's as if Augie had really terrible bedside manner. And it's one of the things I love about Jose. He can't help it. Like, Jose, both he and Augie eat up a TV camera. When it's on, it is on them. I felt like Augie had great bedside manner. Like, he could charm you. Whereas Jose can't. He cannot. Jose would be so perfect in New York. I've always said, if the city of New York cared about soccer, football, European football, if they cared about it, to the point that he ever coached a team in New York and the New York media ever covered him, it'd be the greatest thing ever. The New York media covering Jose Mourinho would lead every sportscast on Mondays, regardless of what else is going on in the sports world. Like, he is a dynamic personality, and I'm Team Jose, by the way.
Always. Oh, I'm all in for life. Yeah.
I'm Team Jose, but I also know that part of why I really like him is he's snarky in a way that I wish I could be all the time. Like he's, you do not wind him up and think that you're going to get the soft end of the blade with him. He is always going to cut deep, but you can see that there's a person there that cares. You can see that the people who work under him, you know, they don't talk about, I don't know who talks badly about Jose Mourinho that has spent a lot of time with him. It feels like he's a caricature of himself, and the fans that root against his teams have this thing about him. But I thought the Amazon documentary with the Spurs was really proved that point out. I think you could see that the players ended up being, you know, I think they like Jose. I don't know about Dele Alli.
He had a part of that doc in an episode where, like, he was broken up because his Yorkshire Terrier died, his little dog. Like, yes. You know, and like, he just kind of saw some like, wow, this is like a very human element to this guy who at the same time just recently said, you know, hey, why didn't Arsene Wenger write about you in his book? He goes, well, a book is supposed to be happy. He never beat me. Like, why would he write about me? Like that's the same guy. Like, he can go from that to that. And, you know, and it's just, I just listen to him and just there's so much given to, you know, the mental aspect of building a team and a culture and the competitiveness and value winning. And it's like, yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, there's some Augie-isms in there. But yeah, if the MLS ever gets big, like really big, and gets that sort of media coverage, like, and he decided to make the move of every old you know, guy in the Premier League that's kind of past his prime. All right, I'm going to go to the MLS and hang out in a cool city and do my thing. Like, oh my gosh, it just, the coverage and the back and forth, like, it'd be endless. It'd be endless entertainment value too.
I would love to see the reverse Ted Lasso. So he takes a job with the Jets as
or
their
the
head
Knicks,
coach.
Or the Knicks.
Yeah. Or the Knicks.
Yeah,
yes.
The Knicks would be perfect.
It would be perfect. And they couldn't do worse. You couldn't tell me that Jose Mourinho takes over the Knicks. He's got his version of the beard working for him. And that Jose just handles the Jose stuff. And that, you know, it would break him because he really is, like, he loves the X's and O's part of coaching. And I don't think people really appreciate, like, how good he is. His teams win. And I don't think we appreciated how good he was at Manchester United. I think we went, oh, well, they finished second because Liverpool didn't try real hard because, you know, they were in the Champions League and blah, blah, blah.
Wasn't lying when he said that was, like, one of the best accomplishments he's had.
Yeah, he was like, hey, we won trophies. We finished second behind a historically great Manchester City. Like, best coaching job I've ever done. And people were like, bah, ha, ha, ha. And then he left. And then people got 12 months of Ole, and then people were like, man, Jose really did do a good job with that United team upon retrospect. And it didn't take very long for his United career to age very well. I think Tottenham's going to be a handful this year. Like, I don't know what their ceiling is, because I really don't know what Bale has in him, really and truly. Like, we'll find out soon, I guess. But he's got a team of his guys, I think, now. And I think the players that showed up bought in. And, you know, I feel pretty confident, even with the Virgil injury, that, like, we're going to make top four. We've got too many world-class players that even if we don't win the league, we'll be okay. But if I'm Chelsea and United, and even City to a certain
extent, City, yeah,
like, Tottenham feels like a problem. And that's why I think, like, there were a lot of teams very quietly watching that West Ham game this weekend. And when they came back, it wasn't like, oh, let's pile on Jose because it's fun to watch that happen to him. I think there were a lot of people who were like, good, we need Spurs to be dropping 2 points because that's a good team.
Right. Yeah. It's weird as a Tottenham fan to actually see, like, legitimately talented players on the bench. Like, I'm watching them in the Europa League yesterday, and Bale played. He played about 60 minutes, and you can tell he's not in full game fitness yet. He's just not quite there. There's some definite rust there. He had a couple flashes. But it's like, oh, okay, you don't have to play Kane, and you can bring Son off the bench if you want. And, oh, the midfield's got some other guys. And, oh, here's this new signing here and there. Oh, let's just put Ben Davis at center back. And It's like, wow, you know, I'm I guess this is what it's like to be a Chelsea fan after their big spending, and the Liverpool fan recently, and Man City and things like that. They just haven't quite had that group. But yeah, it's going to be wild. Speaking of that, I hate to do this to you, but what ranks higher on your hate scale right now, Jordan Pickford or VAR?
Pickford. Because honestly, you could lose 10 VAR decisions. The side, like Virgil van Dijk is like one of my favorite athletes. In my adulthood, there are very few athletes that I love more than Virgil van Dijk. He is best in the world at his position. Like I don't watch anybody else in the Premier League that I would even allow in the same breath as him as a player and at his position. And, you know, his arrival at Liverpool literally coincides with the team really taking off and going into the stratosphere. And he's a good dude. He's a good, everybody loves him. He's as cool as the other side of the pillow. Like, that's my guy. He and Sadio Mane, those are my two guys. If something happened to Sadio Mane, it'd be like losing a family member. But, like, to see Virgil van Dijk get hurt on such a, as Jenny Wijnaldum put, it was just a stupid play. Stupid. Like, no, Jordan Pickford didn't mean to hurt Virgil van Dijk. I don't believe. I just think Jordan Pickford is an awful, clumsy, stupid player. And, you know, that makes it worse. You know, when you see someone try to hurt somebody, then you can hate that person forever and feel good about it. This was just stupidity. This was just a guy. It just was so that there's a reason why we don't see that every week. And it's funny, I've seen the replays of when he somewhat did that to Dele Alli back in a Spurs game from a few years ago. And I was like, well, that's God. I can't believe that there actually is something remotely close to that. But like what he did to Virgil van Dijk, it might as well have been the Joe Theismann injury. The way he plowed into him and the way Van Dijk's body like collapsed under the force of it. It's a bad thing to ask me. Like I can live with really terrible officiating. I can't stand the idea that one of the world's best athletes' career may have forever changed directions because some fucking clumsy dude couldn't not be clumsy. And it'll bother me. And people will be like, oh, you know, I'm not one of these guys that's like coming after Jordan Pickford on social media. But I am one of these guys that sure does think about it every day. Like I think about it, like wanting to just type something to Jordan Pickford very angrily. Nothing that would get me suspended, but something that would still make me look bad.
I hope the next time they play their fans in the stands, just because of like, I want some sort of like microphone or iPhone video or something near the Liverpool section when they play, just because I can't imagine the hatred that's going to come from those fans directed at him.
Well, and look, the Richarlison challenge on Thiago was worse in the sense that it was premeditated. He literally turned his head as he's going 2 feet in, could have broken the dude's his first start at Liverpool, and Richarlison's all bent out of shape because he hasn't done anything in 90 minutes. And it makes the Pickford thing worse in that it's in the last half dozen years, I've seen like four of these types of situations now with Everton players coming in on Liverpool players. And it's like, enough's enough. And the one that was the least purposeful, Pickford, is the one that does really and truly the most damage. And it's just like, it's frustrating. Virgil van Dijk, it would be like us picking any player in any sport, if we were to pick like LeBron James or Anthony Davis or Kevin Durant, and say, well, you can understand it when a guy hurts himself just competing. But when it's a cheap shot or some guy is just not paying attention and they roll into him, or, you know, one of these things where another guy's inability to not be clumsy or dangerous really hurts another player. That's hard to swallow. Whereas the VAR thing, I'm kind of already over that. That happens all the time.
Yeah. And it's kind of sad that we're at that point that we just kind of expect it now.
Look, VAR is awful because there's still a human element that can't be completely wiped. That stain, how the hell does – I appreciate NFL officiating so much.
Yeah.
I watch the Premier League. And I think about all the weird little beasts. Do you realize how difficult it has to be sometimes for an NFL player to get, like, snookered? The other day I was watching a game. I can't even remember who it was. And they forgot a detail. It was in one of the NFL games. It might have been the Cowboys game. And they were like, oh, they forgot that you can't have – the clock can't run. And, like, they got it wrong. And then, like, 5 seconds later, it was like, oh, got it right. And they fixed it and corrected it and reset the clock. And, like, everything was perfect. And I was like, 99 times out of 100, NFL officiating is on top of it. It's rare.
Right.
When something's blown so badly and then on top of it, officiating in the replay booth doesn't get it right ever. Like, those are like one in a million things. We do that. We call those Saturdays in the Premier League.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Rant
over. It's a bummer that, like, they're seemingly so far behind in that area compared to a lot of other places.
It could be you this weekend. Like, it's hard to even want to make fun of Liverpool, right? It's hard to be like, ha ha.
The Newcastle match earlier, you know, with the handball rule with Dyer. Like, I don't even think he was facing the play. Like,
it does feel like you guys get screwed.
And that's like that was 2 points. And let's not bring up the Champions League final. Yes. Let's go ahead and switch topics.
Which I've always been convinced Sadio Mane did that on purpose.
Hey, you know what? Players that talented and that good, I believe it. There's nobody for him to play the ball to.
I don't know.
Yeah.
If he wasn't trying to do that, I don't know where he's playing the ball. Like,
yeah, sorry. It's like, you know, it's like the James Harden, you know, pump fake from three, jump into the guy. Like, you know, he's not going to shoot that shot.
First minute of the game, there was nothing else going on. His arm was out wide. I have always thought one of these days Sadio Mane will write his biography and he'll address it. And I'm curious when he can finally get away from it and not look like a cheat. I wonder if he'll say, I did it on purpose.
Yeah. And I would just kind of nod my head and say, you know what? I don't really blame you. So there are two big, I guess, kind of college basketball projection computer type websites. There's KenPom.com and there's BartTorvik.com. So Bart Torvik has his projections up currently. Ken Palm is still waiting on the schedules to be finalized and this and that, and if Greg Marshall is going to get fired. There is only one team that is returning all of its minutes from last year, and it's also returning what they call returning possession minutes. Basically, are you returning your most important players that were involved in all of your possessions and things like that? That same team is currently projected to be the number one team in college basketball for the upcoming season. That team is Texas. What is your reaction to that? And this is a computer system that pretty much it's like both of these systems rival what Las Vegas would think from a game matchup type deal. And it didn't like Texas last year. They were basically, I think, heading into the season like a fringe 25, you know, 15 to 25 type range, I think. And by the end of the year, they were rated accordingly. I think they were way down in like the 60 range or something like that. But this year, the computers love them, some Shock and Smart and some Longhorns. And like, I've talked to one of the guys behind the system. I've talked to Bart Torvik himself about it. And he's like, look, since I've been doing this, we've never seen a team return this many consensus top 100 prospects. It just doesn't happen. And I'm thinking in my head, yeah, you know, a lot of those guys end up transferring for more playing time or, you know, or for whatever reason, you know, the Kentuckys of the world reload with one of Duns and so on and so forth. And the teams that have basically had a similar type of roster from a returning player and talent standpoint almost always go to the Final Four. So the computer is telling him, hey, we've never seen a roster like this before. they've got more returning talent than anybody we've seen. All of their guys are coming back, and they're adding this freshman guy to the mix that you're plugging in to be a at least a significant contributor. What do you think this is going to be the number one team in the country? How do we process that? Like, I'm already preparing myself to have to try to explain, because I've written about this months ago, how to explain to Texas fans that the most respected computer projection systems in college basketball think their team is might be the number one team in the country.
It's funny, Dustin, because when the idea, you know, when Shaka was at this point, when we were in March, and the conversation was, should they or should they not on Shaka? One of the things that people would put, like myself and you, would point out to is, you know, next year, if they get Greg Brown, like, they got a lot of dudes coming back. And say what you want to about college basketball, it is the sport. It is the only sport that I can think of off the top of my head where when you have a bunch of seniors or older guys and experience on the team, like, it, we point to it all the time. A team gets deep into March and you look at the roster and you go, oh, well, look, they got a senior backcourt and four upperclassmen in the starting lineup and one badass freshman or something. And we didn't love this team a year ago, but it had some bits and pieces of it that were doing some good things. And unlike every other Shaka Smart team that it seems like he's had, with the exception of a couple, feels like any bad thing that could happen to Shaka Smart at times has happened. He's lost players for a variety of injuries, and just things happen. Things have happened to him while he's been the coach at Texas. But at the beginning of this season, it looks like on paper, like you just discussed, the computer model is going to love Texas because, in theory, it does have all of the things that we talk about good teams, that the things they never have in college basketball, Texas kind of has this season. And it will be fascinating to see what it really means, because if it doesn't succeed, then Texas fans will forever be able to cast away the notion that all it really needs is all the things that, curiously, it has this season.
It's the roster that I think coaches dream of, you know, from the senior point guard who started every game he's played for 3 years, and then the, you know, the other junior guard that's played a bunch when since he arrived, and, you know, oh, your guy that was basically robbed of the middle of his career because of leukemia is back and feeling better than ever, and your front court guys came back, and then you added maybe the best player from Central Texas ever to your roster. And yeah, it's the stuff coaches dream of. And
Matt Coleman's a senior, man.
He's a senior. Yeah, I remember, like, it seems forever ago that I went to cover his announcement in at the Basketball Hall of Fame, that big high school tournament they do. He's a senior, and he has started every single game that he's played. Like, it's – you typically have guys like that, and it's like those guys usually are like – you're talking about them in March. Like, oh, you know, they're led by these senior guys, and they finished third in the league, and they won a bunch of games, and here they are, like a 2 or 3 seed or something. Like, that's – what this roster is. And it's going to be a fascinating year. And of course there's going to be the layer of, you know, not the playing, you know, 24, 25 games instead of the full slate, and the non-conference schedule is going to get real in the hurry with a trip out to Asheville, which used to be the Maui Invitational, but now it's in North Carolina for a year, and against those teams. And yeah, I don't know, like, if Texas fans haven't turned their attention to basketball, although I think some of them are kind of jokingly saying, bring on basketball, we're ready for it, just because of everything that's going on with the football shit show. But they haven't truly turned their attention to basketball. And when they do, I don't know how they're going to process this. Because, you know, the fans on our website, generally, they're going to go look at this stuff. They're going to go to Ken Palm. They're going to, you know, they're going to read what I write from that angle about the computer projections and what people are saying about this team. Like, you know, John Rothstein tweeted out earlier this week, he had Big 12 coaches tell him that top to bottom, Texas has the most talented roster in the league. And I'm thinking in my head, yeah, they're probably right. And I just don't know how Texas fans are going to process this. And I don't know how they're going to process it if we get to the point where the projections are right and they just start winning a ton of basketball games. Like, how do they in their heads, deal with that as part of the conversation about Shaka Smart, because there's not many people, as you know, there's not many people still left on that bandwagon for him turning this thing around in Texas.
No, which would make, you know, I don't want to, the one thing you and I won't do on this podcast is we won't get carried away to the point where we make promises about this team that we can't cash those checks.
Yeah. But, I got a text the other day from Bill Bittick, and he's fired up about basketball, and I'm basically saying, be careful,
But it, you know, it's, I'll just say this. When we look at college basketball, it is, I think, more so than college football, because I don't think we glaringly see what it, you know, I don't watch college football and think to myself, oh, there's a team full of upperclassmen and you can tell they're playing a, visually it doesn't stick out like that. Men's basketball does. Mm-hmm. Men's basketball, at times when you see a normal college basketball team playing a veteran team, it kind of looks like some men playing some teams with some boys on it. And this is a team. I'm looking at the roster. So I'm literally looking at the roster right now, and I'm going to go in numerical order so that it's not like any bias in terms of how I start and where I go. But, you know, Liddell's a junior. Andrew Jones is a redshirt junior. Coleman's a senior. That blows my mind. Ramey's a junior. Then you got Greg Brown, but then you've got Royce Ham senior. Donovan Williams is a sophomore, but then Jace Fabris is a senior. Then you look at Jericho Sims as a senior. I cannot believe that Jericho Sims is a freaking senior.
Right. Yeah.
How did that happen?
I don't know.
And, you know, Kai Jones is a sophomore, and you keep, even Hepa is a junior now. This is a team that goes legitimately about 8-9 deep. And only a couple of those are young guys. Almost everybody's a junior or a senior. And Dustin, when was the last time Texas on the basketball? I feel like we got to go back to the last time Texas made a really deep run where we would find a starting lineup and like an entire team of legitimate older guys up and down the lineup all over the place. It feels like
somebody asked me about the Durant team. And I was like, the Durant team dreams that had this experience. That was a bunch of freshmen and some sophomores, and some of those guys were playing out of position. And the team next year that made a run kind of showed you what happens when some guys gain some experience. But we don't ever really see rosters like this. I just can't believe, like, me in my head after the season ended, well, you know, the pandemic was going on, but eventually when guys started coming back to campus and workouts were going, and the season was like, okay, they're going to have a college basketball season. I kept thinking in my head, man, I better check with my sources about the transfer portal. There's got to be a guy that leaves. There has to be, you know, these guys that they got to see Greg Brown show up and say, hey, I'm not playing over that guy. And none of these guys left. Like, it's just, not only are they like a bunch of experienced guys, they seem to all like each other and they all like their coach. Like, we don't really ever see this sort of thing in college basketball. Usually those guys are the first sign of not being a starter rotation player. They're running for the hills. They're transferring. They're going somewhere and trying to get a waiver and become immediately eligible to go play at some other high major program. And that didn't happen. And like, it's created just this roster top to bottom. You know, like you said, Jericho Sims is a senior. You know, it blows my mind. And then you got a guy like Kai Jones, who a lot of people think could be a guy that jumps to the NBA and is in the first round of the draft after this season. And yeah, it's just, I don't know how Texas fans are going to process that when they see that. And I don't know how they're going to process it if this team just actually lives up to the expectations for a change, which, by the way, I don't think any of us are betting on.
No. Hey, can I ask you a quick hoops question?
Yeah.
Will Baker.
Uh-huh.
What? Look, it could be that on this team, we just talked about three front court players that right. are going to play, right? So the minutes are somewhat, I don't know where Will Baker is getting a lot of his minutes, but this is a guy that took a year to adjust. This is a guy that I think when he's a senior and a junior is going to look different than when he's been a young player, but he's a sophomore now, which means he may be in between. Is that just the correct answer? He's in between what he may eventually be and what he was maybe a year ago, but really talented guy, super highly ranked, and the game felt a little too fast for him a year ago. Has it slowed down to the point where the best of Will Baker can be accentuated instead of the discomfort of him still settling in?
I think you said it earlier. I think he's still in between.
Okay.
When they signed him, to me, it was like, this is a, because some people, you know, kind of push back on the ranking, just kind of people in the industry and things like that. And I get it. Because normally, typically those guys, they show up, you know, your Jared Allens of the world and things like that. All of those big guys have an adjustment period because they simply have to learn and they have to train their bodies to be able to play hard consistently at that level. You know, the multiple efforts that all the coaches talk about. And that was, I think, the biggest adjustment for Will Baker. You know, he's, what is he listed at? I think 260. Like, I think he arrived at like 7'2", 250. Like, so those guys sometimes just have to learn how to run up and down the floor all the time at this level and fight for position and set a screen and move their feet on defense. There was so much of that adjustment period for him that it just, I think, just never really allowed that talent to show. And we'll see more of that talent this season. But I think that's a guy that's a junior and senior type of play to where like, oh, okay, this is the skill set. This is the big guy that can step out and shoot the ball from the perimeter, but all can also handle the ball in the low block and kind of facilitate offense and this and that. This is that Texas signed out of high school. But I think it's going to be another kind of in between type of year for him. And unfortunately, you know, so much of what basketball is right now, and this is true at the college level as well, but not to the extent that it is at the NBA. But if you're a big guy on the floor, you got to be able to defend pick and roll. Have to. Or you know, in college, you'll see more zone and things like that. But if you can't, people are going to pick on you. And that's what happened sometimes last year, is that defenses just kind of went right at him because he just didn't quite have that flexibility, that foot speed, that lateral quickness that you, that a Jericho Sims has, that a Kai Jones has, and even to a lesser extent, by the way, I talked about Brock Cunningham, who I think he's a guy that was just named one of the top 10 glue guys in the country. He's probably going to have to play some minutes as well, just because you need that toughness element on the floor. So yeah, I think it's going to be an in-between type of year. He's going to be better, but I think that's a guy that, you know, junior and senior years, like, oh, okay, this is the type of guy that had the lofty recruiting ranking that can do all those things. But it kind of speaks to this roster that we're talking about, a five-star player who has a really unique skill set for a big guy. And as he showed against TCU last year when he had like 20 points and a bunch of threes, he has that in his bag. But they don't even really have to force that guy into minutes because they have so many other players.
Yeah, he reminds me of, you know, people forget that when Chris Mims showed up from Westlake, his third year was a big year, and you know, ends up being, and I hate to make the comparison because Mims ends up being a lottery pick, and his junior season was really good, but you know, it some of the exact same things that we're saying about Will Baker in terms of needing to adjust to the level of the ball and adjust his body and what it means to be that big and to be required to suddenly the physical demands. Like, you could just see it on the kid's face last year that, you know, this was just, he, you know, it's like doing Spanish 1 and then being thrown into a Spanish 3 class. It's a lot. It's a lot to take on. You know, You can hang, but ultimately it ain't the same thing. And I think, you know, I'm curious to see where he goes, because I can see where he, as a junior and senior, can end up being a really valuable player on this team. That may happen next year, ironically enough, and because they'll have some losses in that front court, right? I mean, we could be looking at a year where next year they're basically almost all, you know, they could lose Kai Jones, they could lose, and I – real quick, any chance any of the seniors would come back? Is it too early to even do that? But is there a world where Jericho Sims would come back for a fifth year because his NBA draft prospects don't look great? Or once he's done, he's just going to go play pro ball somewhere?
I'm not ruling it out with any of those guys. The one that's the most curious to me is Febres, because he's coming off of the microfracture surgery. And like, right. Once I heard that, I was like, that's a really tough thing to come back from. And then immerse yourself as a rotation guy. And you look at the guards and it's like, well, Ramey's going to play. Jones is going to play. Coleman's going to play. You know, Greg Brown's going to play. Like, they've got some, you know, Donovan Williams just got cleared recently. So they've got some bodies there. But yeah, I think that the fact that they have, like, none of these guys left, I wonder if Shaka Smart at some point is going to have a conversation with some of these guys about, like, hey, like, you know, let's keep your eligibility in order and you come back and look. Like, we could lose a lot of guys. There's going to be a lot of playing time waiting next year that we're going to need guys to fill in for. So, yeah, I'm not ruling it out with any of those guys. It's just, you know, you just don't often see some of these guys that, you know, haven't had quite the career they thought they're going to have from a playing time standpoint. Stay put at the place and just keep putting the work in and enjoy what they're doing and enjoy the people they're around. So I know in an ideal world, if I'm Shaka Smart, I hope some of those guys come back or he is able to manage those guys in a way like, look, let's keep you at where you are right now. Cause if you come back, you're going to be playing a lot more minutes than you are playing right now.
What else you got for me?
One last one and I'll let you go because man, we've crushed this thing for over an hour already. what do you look in your crystal ball? What do you think we're talking about and writing about next week? Cause I tried to think of this earlier and I'm like, I have given up trying to figure out like what the topic's going to be next week.
I think they beat Baylor. And then I think, you know, I think just negativity will treat that game as an insignificant detail on the path to something bigger. And I think they'll go into next week. You know, next week is potentially the week where a narrative could change. We were talking about earlier in this podcast where what does it look if they can get their head above water, keep it above water, stay in the rankings, build up some momentum. It's weird that the ESPN FBI index still has Texas, I think, with the second best odds of winning the conference.
Yeah, so, that blows my mind.
It blows my mind. It doesn't make any sense because I don't
think – like, did they somehow bake into that ranking that Kansas State lost its quarterback? Or I don't know. Like, it doesn't really make sense.
It does not make sense, but it's still a thing. And – but it won't be if, you know, they get dump-trucked and take their third loss next week. Now, I think they could get in with three losses into the Big 12 championship game, but – I don't think it can be a loss because I don't think they can win their last four games. I think asking them to win five of their last six is about the most that you could expect out of this team.
Have they ever done that under Herman? I think it's asking them to do something they've never done before.
Well, I'm asking Sam to play a brand of football for six consecutive weeks that he's never played before. For whatever reasons, injuries, whatnot, but like it still has never happened. So, I don't know. I think they're going to win this weekend. If they don't, I mean, you know what the story is going to look like. If you're asking me what the storyline is going to be next week, I'm thinking that they're going to win on Saturday. But if they lose, which isn't out of the question, I mean, it just won't be fun because I don't think they're going to fire Herman midseason. I just don't. And I think they need the cover of there's still a world out there where this band thing isn't resolved and Urban Meyer is a tricky hire. And I don't know. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's not. Maybe baggage or not, that's an easy hire to make. But
you got to get your house in order before you go after the big dogs. Signed, really Nick Saban.
They need the time to get their house in order. And I think right now they're not a very in order bunch, but that's okay. Like, I think if Texas loses on Saturday, I think if you're a Texas fan, take a deep breath. Don't lose your shit. The reality is what's known at that point is known, and they've got 6 weeks to get this thing figured out to some extent, if that, like 5 weeks. But they really need that time to get on the same page. This is a school that's got an obscene amount of infighting all over the place right now because of the things that we talked about earlier in this podcast. And, you know, push comes to shove. I'm fascinated by what ends up happening after this season on the coaching front, because I don't think it will be. We haven't seen this place do seamless and easy and clean and professional in such a long time that the idea that I could give them the benefit of the doubt in 5 weeks, they can't get – say what you want about the BOR putting out a statement yesterday with regards to the eyes. That could have happened 5 months ago. That could have happened after the opener. That could have happened after TCU. Like, this place is a mess, period. I'm done.
And with that, let's wrap it up with the image of Kevin Bacon in Animal House screaming all is well as the town is rioting and things are falling apart, because that's just kind of what I think of a lot when I think of this Texas program right now. Well, Ketch, thanks for hopping on with me for another edition of the Dustin McComas Show on theyak.com. Get to orangewoods.com, obviously, to check out all of our coverage, but get to theyak.com. A lot of good podcasts coming out this week. Make sure you're following us on Twitter, follow us on Instagram, both the Yak and our personal accounts, and Facebook as well, to kind of know when all the new episodes are coming out. And download the damn app if you haven't downloaded it already. I'm still kind of in awe of how good that thing is. There's, you know, every time a podcast is published, it kind of just pops up on my little Apple Watch, so I know to tune in. So for Ketch, I'm Dustin McComas. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a good weekend. If things go poorly, try not to freak out too much. Signed your number one. Are you still number one in the mod poll? Last you looked?
Yes. No, the mod poll is done. It's done. At a 48-hour window on it. It is not evolving. Now,
so you are the reigning mod poll leader heading into the weekend.
I'm the mod champion today.
All right.
Well, I don't know that a new poll would reflect that, but Dustin, it reminded me of when I wrote my book. For 2 days or like 3 days, I was number one on the Amazon.com sports selling books. That didn't last for more than a couple of days, but I still can call myself Amazon.com best-selling author, and I will do that with the mod poll. It'll never happen again, but it happened, and I'm going to hold on to it forever.
Sounds like you need to update your Twitter bio is what you're telling me. But that is the reigning mod poll leading champion. Yes. Guy. And I think he and I agree. Please don't freak out too much this weekend. Please, let's just, if we can have a kind of normal Saturday, it would be great. But for all those listeners out there, thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend. Wear a mask, stay safe, and take care.
Pretty please.